Yes, Alfred?
To the bat phone, sir.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
It's Batman!
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 72 of Batmania 66. Tonight's episode is called Penguin is a Girl's Best Friend. And it would help if I was actually looking at my notes for that episode. Tonight, we are sadly without Holly, who's feeling a bit under the weather. But we do have a guest here. We have Mark Warzeka. Mark, if you want to say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody. Ben, I'm so excited to be here. I've listened to the show, and I love the show. And you know, some of my earliest memories as a little kid were about this show, about Batman. And I remember being in nursery school. And so I'm probably 3 or 4 years old and meeting another kid who liked Batman. And we took – there were these blocks, these big blocks, and we used the blocks to build a Batmobile. And we played Batman and Robin. It's one of my earliest memories.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I used to be just obsessed with this show, and I haven't seen it in so long. And it was so much fun to watch this episode with you.
It's – you know, it's one of those things where people who never watched it as kids don't quite – it's like me. I had not seen Goonies or The Breakfast Club until I was in my late 20s or early 30s. Mm-hmm. So I missed out on those. I appreciate them and I understand why people like them. Mm-hmm. But my Goonies is actually Monster Squad because I saw that at the Whoa. Right age.
I was with you on Breakfast Club. I did not see it till my 20s. And liked it, but I know what you mean. Like, yeah. Didn't have the same experience. I have never seen Goonies. And okay. Now Stranger Things is out. And, you know, everyone's obsessed right. with it. And my wife, and they're like, you're going to love it. It's just like Goonies. And every time I go, I never saw Goonies. People, like, threaten to kill me.
I had the same experience. What I would do, though, is because sometimes I enjoy antagonizing people. I used to just go, Monster Squad is better than Goonies. And I used to get the reaction all the time. And it's one of those things. Never give a ham a setup. Because everybody would go, how can you say that? And my response was always, easy, I haven't seen Goonies.
There you go. So I win.
But yeah, it's interesting having guests on who don't remember the show. Or don't, because
yeah.
They honestly come into it and are baffled.
Because you're like, what is this weird, self-aware, cheesy, hilarious show?
And the best thing about it is we get a lot of, when we're recording, we get a lot of, okay, who is that person?
Yeah.
What is that person?
Yeah.
And I love it. But I love having people who genuinely appreciate the show on as well, because they come into it and like we were talking a little bit during the show, there's the way that this has been cleaned up and reprocessed and remastered is just so beautiful. It's so cliche to say this, but it's watching the show in a way you've never seen it
before. Yeah. The first thing I wrote in my notebook when you turn on the episode was, it looks so great.
Yep.
It's so gorgeous. And it's really stunning, the whole episode. It's so colorful and detailed. And as a kid, I was always watching it on my, you know, crappy little black and white television yep. or whatever. And you just never, or an old antenna TV, even if it was in color, you just never saw it like this.
Right, exactly. And it's... I know I've talked about it before, but it's one of those things where, again, anybody who's a fan of the show, when they see this remaster, it's just so clean and so bright.
Yeah. When I saw the Batmobile, I had a memory of going to Autorama when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that was that like a nationwide thing. I grew up in Detroit, so cars were huge. So there was Autorama, which was like an annual auto show, car show.
I mean, they're all over the country, but not that particular show that I know.
Yeah, okay. But like they would bring cars from TV and display them. It was a big auto show, but they'd have stunt cars and then they'd have monster trucks and they'd have the General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard. But
oh,
one
that's
year
awesome.
They had the Batmobile. So I begged my dad to take me, so we went. And they said, Adam West is going to be there signing autographs. See the Batmobile and Adam West. So we were in line to see Adam West, and the line is really long. And you're excited, but also, like, this line is long.
Right.
And we want to get to see the rest of Autorama. And the guy comes on, and he goes, sorry, folks, it's going to be a little while. We got to take a little break. Adam West will be back in just a few minutes. I mean, he probably has to go to the bathroom or get a smoke or something.
Right.
And but the audience goes, ah. You know, they don't want to wait any longer than they're waiting. And Adam West has gotten up. He's like leaving already at this point. He hears the audience react like this, stops, turns around, takes the microphone out of the guy's hand who had announced it, and in the Batman voice says, actually, folks, I wasn't going to say anything, but we've spotted the Joker on the roof of the convention center. That's and fantastic. Robin is outside with my bat gear. I've got to go change into my Batman outfit. Robin and I are going to arrest the Joker, turn him into Detroit City Police, and I'll be back in about 15 minutes. And the kids bought it. I mean, I believed him.
Right.
And the parents cracked up and loved it. And he totally, like,
smoothed the situation. Oh, that's brilliant.
It was fantastic.
That's awesome. I had a really interesting conversation with George Barris. Chuck Barris is the guy from The Gong Show. George Barris is the guy who designed the cars. George Barris' sister, who actually ran transportation for Warner Brothers for almost 30 years as well.
Okay.
And I had a long conversation with her just recently in the last few months about her brother and designing the Batmobile. And not nearly as cool as your experience seeing the Batmobile, but a few years ago at Comic-Con, they had all of the existing Batmobiles up to just before Batman v Superman because that hadn't been announced yet.
Oh, okay.
And so I got to actually see the 66 Batmobile and just stare at every inch of it. And it's such an amazingly designed car.
Yeah. And when you love a show like this, it's like watching the episode with you just now. It's like there's so many feelings and emotions and memories that come up when you see it.
And speaking of feelings and memories and emotions, as our guest, it is your duty and honor to tell us who our villain is and what the villainous plot of the episode was.
The villain was the Penguin, who was very heavily featured in this episode. He's in a lot of it. And the plot was very discernible, actually.
This was pretty good.
Yeah, this was a pretty clear plot for as these things go. But the Penguin had started a motion picture company. He'd started his own film company called Penguin Pictures. And he did so. He was pretending to want to shoot films. But actually, he just was wanting to stage a shoot at the Museum of Antiquities so that while he was there, quote unquote, filming his movie, he could steal valuable antiques.
Yep. So when our episode begins, we see the Penguin directing a robbery. There's an armored car. Two goons are beating up, presumably the driver and the other armored car guy. And Batman and Robin just kind of pull up on it, right?
Yeah. They run in.
They pull up on it. They say they're going to have to delay their speech to the Crime Prevention League. And Robin says this might be some good new material for the speech.
Mm-hmm.
They run in and they just start beating up the goons.
Waste no time.
As Penguin yells at them to stop with his megaphone, which is decorated with a tiny little umbrella, which I thought it was adorable.
And also it's like 2 feet from their faces.
Yes. And he is shouting into the megaphone.
Yeah.
Which, to me, immediately was just like, okay, I get this. He's filming something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a little bit
You were a step ahead of Batman and Robin.
Seemingly. We don't find out until later that Batman knew what was going on.
That's true.
Robin is a bit of a dullard in this
episode.
Poor Robin.
They sort of reveal.
Oh, yes, sorry. So my first note about the actual episode is they're talking about this Crime Prevention League speech.
Yeah.
My note is stop talking and stop the robbery.
Yeah.
Because they spent a good 20 seconds just talking about new material for their speech.
Right. This is going to be great. Well, you know, they're very confident in their abilities.
Yes, that's
Batman
true.
Batman and Robin are. They're like, hey, we can chat a little bit. And we are still going to have time to stop this robbery.
Yeah, bordering on smug, I would say.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
Then they beat up the two henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And in chastising Penguin, they refer to him and his outlawry.
Yeah.
pretty sure making up a word here.
Just making up words.
Yeah. Penguin.
It's a word from the bat vocabulary.
Yes.
You know,
Penguin tells them, no, no, you're the idiots. I'm going to sue you. And he points to a huge film crew.
Yeah. They suddenly reveal, cut to, an enormous, unmissable.
Yeah.
Robin's a moron.
Uh-huh.
How could you not see this was happening? Huge film crew shooting
and,
this. And this scene, it's an acting scene. It's not a real robbery. It's Penguin directing a scene from his new movie that he's making for his fake film company.
Yes, and I will point out that in this three shot of Batman, Robin, and Penguin, they are all cheated out towards the film crew.
Yeah.
So there is literally no way that Robin couldn't see all of these people and all of this lighting and everything else that was sitting right there.
This reminded me of, as a comedic improviser, this reminded me of, like, a bad improv scene that I've seen, and I'm sure done myself 80 million times, where two people are performing a scene, and then you decide to enter and reveal that their scene is actually a scene that's happening in a movie.
Right.
You walk in and you're like, cut! All right, that was great, everyone, but let's take it again. It was sort of that moment, but in a Batman episode.
Yep, and you know, at least in an improv, that moment is a good way to ditch out of something that's not necessarily going well.
That's true.
In this, it's just like, it happens, and then they have to stay in that reality.
Right. Then we have to see, then for 25 minutes, this is now the plot of the episode.
So yeah, it's a film crew. Chief O'Hara is randomly at the film set with their film permit and explains that, no, it's legit. Penguin's running a film company.
Well, there's probably not a lot of movies being shot in Gotham.
Yeah.
And he wants to, Gotham City, wants to see what's going on. And at least here in Los Angeles, if you're shooting a film, like sometimes they'll shoot in my neighborhood. I'm sure they shoot here in your neighborhood sometimes. You are legally required to have a police officer or a retired police officer on site for security. So maybe that's what he was doing
but
in
the
his
chief
off hours.
The chief of police?
It's a big deal. Penguin started a film company.
I suppose. You know what? I suppose if Penguin was doing any kind of supposedly legitimate business, you would want somebody pretty high up in the police department to be there. So
keep an eye on.
Maybe we'll give him credit for that one.
Yeah.
Penguin is now shouting that he's going to sue Batman and Robin through the megaphone directly at them. And Batman did one of my favorite things, which is something loud happened and he covered the bat ears. He didn't cover his own.
I didn't even notice that.
That is
so funny.
Which to me is reminiscent of one of my favorite things in classic Doctor Who that a friend once pointed out, which is Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor, the one with the long, long scarf. When Tom Baker is offered a drink in Doctor Who, he takes a moment, he listens to it, and then he'll drink it.
Sure.
And it's just that sort of great, sort of off-putting choice that just makes you stop and want to call a little bit of a timeout. Just, wait, what?
Here, Mike, who knows what it might say?
Yep.
The Doctor has powers. He might hear the drink go, please don't drink me.
Right, exactly.
I'm an alien from the planet Gleeblethorpe, and do not kill me.
Oh, man, you just wrote a better Doctor Who than most of classic Doctor Who.
The other thing about that bat costume that I forgot is that he just randomly has bat eyebrows drawn onto the cowl.
Like, excuse me for putting it this way, but it's straight up stereotypical urban Hispanic female eyebrows. Like, they're the giant high eyebrows, except they're in white and not black.
Yeah, they're up super high too, as if he's either really alert or really surprised all
and
the time.
And then randomly there's that little square block that blocks out his nose reason whatsoever.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. This is another episode where the logo is way low. It's not sternum. It's like midway between chest and stomach.
Mm.
And there are certain of the bat suits that they used that were correct. And I think as they got used and got a little bit stretched out, I think they went lower. But it drives me nuts whenever it's that low. I can't stand it.
It's a little pet peeve of yours.
This is what happens when you watch 75 episodes of a show. You start to see that sort of stuff. This is when Penguin offers them a deal to get out of him filing a lawsuit.
Yeah, because if you're Batman and Robin, you don't want to get sued. You could lose everything. You could lose the bat computer. You could lose the bat cave. You could lose everything.
Yes. One, I have a lot of questions about legality in Gotham.
Yep.
Because Batman and Robin seem to enter in a fair number of contracts.
Yeah.
And how can they do that?
Right.
Because it's clearly an alias. They're
You can just sign legal contracts as made up characters.
Yeah, they don't have like a driver's license that says Batman.
Right. Can the guy who plays Santa Claus at the mall just sign legal contracts? Can he just get a mortgage for a house as Santa Claus?
Yeah. Maybe his proper name. Maybe St. Nicholas is what he's got to use. But,
right.
Well, isn't that the plot of Miracle on 34th Street?
Yeah, actually, it might be.
We find out after the credits, all of this happens in the cold open, by the way. We find out after the credits that Batman and Robin have signed on to be part of Penguin's new picture.
Yep.
And that Batman knew that it was a film set all the time.
Yes.
And he only signed on so they could keep a keep an eye on Penguin.
And you think maybe at that moment he'd go, Robin, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
There was a camera. There were 20 people filming us.
Right. Or just
I knew the whole time. A and B. How did you not know?
Or just like the chief on Get Smart. Just grabbing his temples for a moment in frustration of dealing with this idiot.
But he's very nice to Robin.
Yeah, oh, he is. And it's funny because normally he lectures Robin about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very strange to watch him be kind of gentle in this instance where Robin was really dumb.
Really dumb.
We then cut to Penguin's studio.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Penguin Pictures, right?
Yes. It's called Penguin Pictures, yes.
And Penguin is asking his secretary to tell him when Marsha Queen of Diamonds comes in.
Yeah, wait. Who is Marsha Queen of Diamonds? Because when she appeared, you were like, oh, but I don't know who this is.
She is a character that was created only for the show.
Okay.
So far, I believe she's had one story, so two episodes.
Okay.
That did include her Aunt Hilda as well.
Oh, okay, yeah, we're going to get to her.
Who I totally forgot about until they started mentioning her in this episode.
What in God's name was happening with her? Okay, we'll get to her.
But Marsha, Queen of Diamonds, is unsurprisingly a diamond-themed villain.
Yes.
But before that, the secretary opens the door to talk to Penguin, and Penguin is sitting way, way back.
Yeah. He's like miles away. She calls it a football field-sized office.
Yes, and it's... There's nothing in this office. It's just a tiny table.
Right.
All the way in the back of this like 40 or 50 foot long office. And he's literally using his megaphone to speak with his secretary.
Right. Penguin wasn't messing around. When he decided to create a fake film company.
Yeah.
He went all out. Well, and he's got a big ego. And he's got his giant office and his little table at the end of it. Like all film executives with huge egos have.
Yep. And
you and I have been in so many offices like that here in Hollywood, haven't we, Ben?
Yep. But it's one of those things where I look at it and it's just sort of like, this is... I wonder if this was the writer's decision or if this is something that the actors pushed. But somebody was kind of venting their frustrations about the studios.
Yeah, right.
Clearly. Because this was them being like, all right, this is the kind of crap we have to deal with every day.
A not so subtle allegory here.
But Penguin then explains, he's then trying to get a hold of the prop department, and he keeps hitting the wrong thing on his phone system, but he is talking into the megaphone at his speakerphone,
mm-hmm.
which was really inconsiderate to whomever he has to talk to.
Got
to
make sure you're heard. When you're the boss... You got to be loud and clear all the time.
Right.
And Penguin knows that.
Penguin finally gets a hold of the prop department after three or four mistries.
Mm-hmm.
Including one, like they totally break the comedy rule of threes here.
Mm-hmm.
He calls three other departments and then just opens up apparently an empty line and tries to talk to that. And I'm like, okay, dial it back. One of these can be cut. Just
He seemed like he was improvising in that moment.
And he might have been.
There's a couple other times in the episode where he seemed like he might have been improvising. And it just made me think in general, they seem like they're having so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Making this show. They really do, especially Adam West and Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
They just seem like they're having a riot doing this.
Well, and one of the facts that I love bringing up pretty much anytime Penguin's on is apparently he was so popular that they kept Penguin scripts in reserve. Just in case Burgess Meredith told him that he was available, they were just like always ready to bring him on and have him on the show.
Well, what a nice compliment.
But he finally gets a hold of the prop department and then asks if the 24,000 gallons of milk are ready.
Right.
Which just made me wonder, what the hell is he planning to do?
And I bet if I gave you 100 guesses... You would have not have guessed where that milk was going to end up later in this episode. I certainly wouldn't have.
I feel like where that milk ended up, there's probably a lot more milk in waiting. Because I don't think where it ended up was 24,000 gallons worth.
But the idea that Penguin had on his mind, we'll get to it.
No, I would not have guessed that.
We'll get to it. So listeners, try to think now. Penguin's got
right,
some use.
If you
use,
haven't watched the episode yet.
If you have not seen this episode, Penguin's got some use for 24,000 gallons of milk for a film he's going to make later in the episode.
Oh, I just had
a try to guess what it's going to be used for.
I just had a gross thought. Do you think it's whole milk? Because that would be...
He said later that it was whole milk.
Oh, did he?
He said it was vitamin D whole milk.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Full of vitamins and minerals.
Somehow that just makes it more gross.
Yeah.
Like, at least it's not buttermilk. That was that would be the only thing to make it even worse.
Or eggnog. Oh,
oh God.
No.
But Marcia finally shows up, and she shows up, and she is blindingly bright.
Yes. Queen of diamonds.
Queen of diamonds, yes. And that's when she asks, how am I supposed to get across this football field of an office?
Right.
And he tells her to use his, what do you call it, penguin?
His Peggy-mobile.
Yes.
And I didn't understand the reference. Peggy-mobile.
Pengy.
Pengy-mobile.
Yes, that's what everybody calls him. That's his nickname. They call him Pengy all over the place.
And I thought it was Peggy, like P-E-G-G-Y, like the secretary, like Don Draper's secretary.
Nope.
On Mad Men. But she has to drive in this little golf cart.
Yeah, I put down Rascal Scooter.
That's better. No, that's more accurate.
But this Rascal Scooter, again, has a larger version of the umbrella that is on his megaphone.
Yeah.
And a plastic, like a duck call decoy, but it's a penguin sticking on the front of it.
Speaking of the props department, who Penguin was trying to call.
Yes.
The actual props department on this actual television show, Batman, mm-hmm. must have had a blast making this show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it had to be great.
What fun they must have had coming up with all this stuff every episode.
And, I mean, the set painters, if they had a specific label guy, that guy was working around the clock.
Yeah.
Because everything, everything in this show is labeled.
Yeah, it says what it is. Yeah. Yes.
Except for one thing, and this is true in this episode as well, no museum exhibit they've had in this show has actually had any kind of placard or label on it. Everything else, every everyday thing is labeled except for the museum stuff.
The people of Gotham are very cultured.
Right.
They know the art when they see it. They don't have to explain. The Pinky Mobile reminded me, of course, of WrestleMania 3. Because
of course.
Of course, right? I'm sure everyone knows what I'm talking about. Because mostly in professional wrestling, and I'm a big fan, when the wrestlers come out, they just walk to the ring. Mm-hmm. But WrestleMania 3 was at the Pontiac Silverdome, and it was in Pontiac, Michigan, with 93,173 fans. And it was the biggest WrestleMania of all time. And it took the wrestlers so long to get from the dressing room to the ring that they had these little golf carts designed as rings, and they carted them down to the ring and back.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's what the Pinky Mobile reminded me of.
That's fantastic. Yeah, didn't know that.
Now you know. You're welcome. You are welcome, man.
So Penguin explains that he's offering her a partnership.
Right.
Ostensibly in the movie company, but really for the big heist that he's planning.
Right. Now we find out this is not on the up and up. Batman was right. Penguin is up to no good with his fake film company.
Right. Well, this, I guess, real film company that's also planning a heist.
Yeah, wait a minute. I'm incorrect to call it a fake film company.
Yeah, he's actually
making films.
Because
he is making films.
Yeah. You know, and this didn't bother me until right now, but we don't have any answer as to what the robbery footage was for.
Right.
Except for a generic movie.
Right. You didn't say what movie was making.
But Marcia then suggests that because she's financing the production with 12 of her diamonds,
mm-hmm.
She should get to be the star.
Mm-hmm.
And Penguin, rather unsubtly, suggests that she might not be well endowed enough to be a movie star.
He said something like, I attempted to write down what he said, but it's hard to... He said something like, I need a star with a little more, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said. But he meant boobies.
Yes. Well, he indicated his chest.
Yeah.
And this is when Marcia calls him Pengy, which I only mentioned because Holly hates it when characters call him Pengy.
Yeah, it's weird. Well, also, this is the first indication we get of what type of film Penguin is going to make.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I just assumed he wanted an ingenue for his movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite know where it was going. Okay, when you put it that way, maybe you're right. This is so he calls her Pengi. She calls him Pengi.
Yes.
And she then asks. Oh, she finds out. He explains that he's gotten Batman and Robin to sign on to be stars in the movie.
Right.
And she asks if there's going to be a love scene with Batman.
Yeah, she's immediately.
And then thrilled. Immediately, if somebody gets to kiss Batman, it's me, because every woman in Gotham, wants him.
Of course. How could you not?
Right, that gorgeous doughy figure,
and the eyebrows,
yes,
and the nose line.
I don't. If I saw that, and maybe, I mean, it was the mid '60s. Maybe that whole barrel chested thing was, you know, more acceptable, but it always shocks me. He looks so much better in a suit as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
as Bruce Wayne in a suit, he is a handsome man. And when they stuff his body in that suit and his face in that cowl, yeah. He gets jowly and pudgy.
He looks pudgy and lumpy, and it doesn't fit him well. Yeah, there's only one scene in this episode where we see them as themselves.
Bruce and Dick.
And I was shocked. I went, man, because I'm used to seeing Adam West as an old man now.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
And I went, and him too, and Burt Ward. Yes, you were used to seeing them as these old guys, which they've been for kind of our whole adult lives. But I went, oh my gosh, they were good looking guys back in the day.
Oh, particularly Adam West. Adam West was like matinee idol handsome. He was a gorgeous man.
Listen, we clearly want to hook up with Adam West and Burt Ward of 1966. If we could travel back in time, Ben and I, right now. We would attempt to hook up with these guys.
There was an episode, one of the episodes where Eric Wielichowski was on.
Yeah.
There was a beauty pageant, and Riddler stormed the beauty pageant. And when we were doing the episode, a lot came out about different people's personalities, because Eric was focused entirely on the Riddler. I was focused entirely on Batman.
Yes.
And Holly couldn't see anything aside from the lady butts. Because, Riddler popped up behind the line of beauty pageant contestants, all in their one-piece bathing suits.
Well.
So it was a slightly up angle on a lot of very pretty women's backsides.
Uh-huh.
Eric and I were all about what was going on in the scene, and Holly's like, I don't remember this scene at all. I just remember women's butts.
Well, this certainly becomes a titillating episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's
a little bit of everything
racy
in
this episode. Yeah,
it's very racy.
But, yes, this is where Marcia mentions that she'll have Aunt Hilda draw up a love potion for Marcia's lipstick.
Right.
Which I saw you go, what? Because this is a character that, as far as you know, he's never been mentioned anywhere before.
Right.
But Aunt Hilda is Marcia's aunt.
Yes.
Who is a potion maker.
Yes.
And a former chemistry professor at Vassar, which she brings up later in this episode, but I know because we introduced her and while ago.
Yeah. And when we see her later in the episode, and I guess viewers know this because she's already appeared, but like, she's a full-on, like, a 100% stereotypical witch.
Yes.
Like, she's a witch in a black hat and a black gown, stirring like a cauldron with a broom.
She is a witch to the point where Bewitched would think it was too on the nose.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, yeah. It's a little much.
Yeah, Bewitched was a very sophisticated, nuanced presentation of witches compared to Aunt Hilda.
Yes, exactly. Marcia makes the comment that she's always wanted to win an Oscar, and this is where Penguin reveals that his fledgling movie company also has its own award called a Penguin.
A Penguin.
Yeah. And he's actually got the statue. It's a gold penguin statue.
That's right.
Which I think might be the same one from the Rascal Scooter, just painted gold.
Yeah, probably.
So we cut to Batman and Robin in the Batcave reading the script for this movie, which is apparently a Gladiator movie.
Right. They realize at that time what they've signed on to is to be to play gladiators in a Gladiator movie.
Yep.
That's what they discover.
Not just gladiators, but bandit gladiators.
Right.
They're the bad guys.
Right.
And Batman is looking through. Robin is appalled that he has to do this. And Batman says, it probably won't get filmed. Check out scene 12 on page 33, which Robin turns to and apparently has finished reading in half a second.
Yeah.
Because he reacts to it immediately.
He's a speed reader.
So either he speed read it, or the first lines of that scene are horribly salacious.
They're really filthy.
But from what Batman is describing or implying about this scene, it sounds like Penguin's making Caligula.
Right. He says, because Batman says, look, take a look at the scene. Robin is shocked. And then Batman says, we're probably going to have to report this to, like, the film decency board.
Yep.
So at that point, you kind of realize, yeah, like, yeah, basically, Penguin's making porn.
Yeah. Which, I don't know if you know anything about set life on this show, but from what I've heard, when it was at its most popular,
yes,
Burt Ward and Adam West used to trade women behind the sets.
Oh my goodness.
So basically they're just filming the backstage stuff going on the show anyway.
Wow, this is a very meta episode of yes. this show.
So they get to set, and this is where we find out that the 24,000 gallons of milk yeah. have been used to fill up Marsha's what do you call it? Not a swimming pool. Bathtub.
Like a giant hot tub, basically.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it would be a hot tub, except I think we're supposed to be in ancient Greece.
So right.
It
wouldn't.
Right. And as Marsha gets led out in front of Batman, Penguin, and Robin.
Right.
By two women just holding a sheet in front of her.
She's completely naked. She makes her entrance. She's like, hello, everyone. I'm ready to film. She's naked under a sheet.
Yeah. And Penguin goes, good, gets the costume mistress to give her her costume, which is literally just three diamonds.
Yeah.
I have questions.
Where are they going to go?
And how much are we going to see? And from a purely puerile standpoint, would that obscure things or make them look much, much larger?
I think they're going one in the belly button, two in her eyes. That's just what I see. I don't know why.
Interesting.
We all have our fetishes.
But this is when Aunt Harriet and the rest of the Gotham City Film Decency League show up.
Well, Batman was true to his word. He and Robin were offended.
Yeah.
And they called the decency league. Reported the film. Not to try to stop Penguin. This had nothing to do, by the way, with them trying to foil Penguin's master plan. No, they just were offended by the content of the film.
At the moment, they don't have any idea what Penguin is up to. No. They just don't want to make the movie.
They just don't want to make this porn film.
Yeah. And Aunt Harriet refers to scene 12, mm-hmm. which she looks at and goes, which I assume you're about to film right now, and calls it a morbid scene.
Morbid.
Which makes, again, I wonder,
snuff.
Does this take a turn for the weird and disturbing? Because, like, straight up naked women, you know, softcore or hardcore porn, I'm totally okay with.
Right.
But yeah, does it become a snuff film? Is it a Red Wedding sort of situation? Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah, morbid is like someone's going to die.
Yeah, exactly.
In this giant milk bath after making love.
This is where Penguin argues that his 24,000 gallons of milk make the scene wholesome because they're full of vitamins and minerals and other things like that.
Yeah, she said, think of the children. He said, I am. This milk is so great for the children.
Right. Yes, think of the children, which had to be a cliche even then. And you know what? This episode, when you look at this episode, mm-hmm. take a step back from it. This is just the writer being pissy with the MPAA and the studio bosses and everybody
yeah.
else.
Yeah, they're getting a lot out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting a lot out. What is it often? Because, you know, like I was saying, man, I haven't seen the show since I don't know how long. Is it often this racy? Like, this was so surprised me.
No, there's a lot of...
Like, she's naked. They're basically shooting Caligula, like you said. I'm like, wow.
There's a lot of form-fitting outfits.
And lady butts.
And lady butts. And every single woman wants to bone Batman. Sometimes Robin, maybe.
Yeah.
And sometimes Robin is literally a second choice to Batman, which I find horrible and funny.
Like what, Batman will reject him and they'll be like, hey, Robin.
No, it's, at least once Catwoman has, in the abstract, just been kind of like, well, if we have to kill Batman, at least I can keep Robin. Because he was mind-washed, brainwashed or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff like Julie Newmar in that Catwoman suit.
Yes.
Like, just her being there is racy, because that was an right. amazing woman, an amazing suit. Yeah.
It seems like it was sort of like a meme, like a thing at the time, where, like, because Captain Kirk was like that on Star Trek, true. Like,
yeah.
All the alien women just fell for him, and the women on the Enterprise, too, for no reason whatsoever.
Well, really. I think it was that whole, that sort of, not semi-chauvinistic, that sort of chauvinistic
yeah.
ideal man.
Right.
Who is strong and brilliant, and everybody wants him because he is who he is.
Right. How did you not fall for him?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's when, so Penguin is thwarted from filming scene 12.
Yes.
And decides to move on to scene 43, which, again, Robin makes sound like it's something really wrong is going to happen.
Yeah.
When it turns out that all he has to do is kiss Marcia.
Right. In scene 43, Batman has to kiss Marcia.
And Batman's response is, I'll have to do it.
Yes, he's, yes.
So we go to commercial, we cut back, come back, and Batman and Marcia are sitting on a fainting couch. Batman is clearly nervous, and for whatever reason, randomly rubbing his chest,
mm-hmm.
which I was just like, is he getting himself worked up?
I think he was annoyed. I think he has the same pet peeve you did. He was like annoyed
at trying to pull
the placement of the bat symbol on his chest.
Maybe. Penguin calls action. And there's apparently no dialogue in this scene whatsoever. It's just
kissing.
Just her grabbing him and kissing him. And
poor Batman. He's truly victimized here.
Yes. Yes.
He has to be kissed by the scantily clad beautiful woman.
Yep. Well, you know, she's not as much of a beautiful, scantily clad woman as Penguin wanted. So
right, that's
maybe
true.
That's...
She doesn't have enough blah, blah, blah.
Penguin then says he's a perfectionist when Batman, he calls to do it again, and Robin says, you got it in one, you don't need to do it again.
Yeah.
And Penguin's like, no, I'm a perfectionist, we can do it again and again and again until we get it right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as anybody, I'm going to go with Penguin on this one.
Yeah.
Because, among other things, he's got to get the angles.
That's true, he's got to get his coverage.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just do it once. It's not a soap opera, he has to do this right.
I feel like this scene really only, this scene would have made a lot of sense to me when I was like, a 8-year-old boy, and I thought girls had cooties. You know what
yeah,
I mean? I thought
yeah,
I would think,
that.
Yeah, this isn't fair to Batman. He doesn't want to kiss this gross girl.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
And Penguin's going to make him do it 100 times. But then as an adult, it sort of plays on another level.
Right.
It's sort of ironic, and you're laughing at it in a different way, which is actually very clever writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. There's also the fact that Robin clearly is acting like a jealous boyfriend.
Right.
Like watching this is torture for him.
Yes. There must be a lot of that throughout these episodes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a ton of it. I actually was talking with a friend at Comic-Con about our podcast and talking about all of the homosexual overtones, and he told me something that I will reveal on the secret of his anonymity, but he told me that when he was helping out do some of the audio tracks, the secondary tracks for this DVD release, the Blu-ray release, apparently all of the outtakes are Burt Ward and Adam West talking about the same sort of homosexual overtones.
Oh, really?
So either, I'm sure they knew at the time, but they have apparently, at least amongst themselves, gotten to the point where they can joke about it openly.
Funny. Okay.
But we cut to Bruce and Dick back at Wayne Manor.
Yes.
Aunt Harriet, who is Dick's aunt.
Yes.
Is worrying about Bruce's lips because apparently they're horribly chapped.
Yeah.
And he explains that they were on an open-air bus tour.
He says, I tried to write it down. I think he said they were on an open-air bus tour of like the Wayne Animal
Exhibit. Animal Sanctuary or something like that. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And that's
yes.
what made his lips chap.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see the list of alts that the writers came up with in the writer's room for what the excuse of the lip chapping was going to be.
I think it's sweet that you think they came up with alts. Dick then says, man, I bet you never want to kiss another woman so long as you live.
Yeah.
And Batman, I think, Bruce rather reasonably says, don't be so quick to judge.
Right. He's like, hey, back off, Robin.
Right.
Back off, buddy. I still like girls. Can I just mention one thing about this scene? It's the only time, as I said earlier, that we see them as themselves, as Bruce and Dick. Also, for no reason whatsoever, Bruce Wayne is holding a golf club through most of this scene.
The whole scene.
It's never acknowledged.
And it's not motivated by anything.
Nothing. He's just holding a golf club.
Yeah. Because that's what rich people do when they get home. They pick up their putter and they walk around the house with
it. That's right. I guess it's probably part of, he has to do things like that in order to protect his identity, right?
Yeah.
I'm so rich and so preoccupied with rich people things
that
even when I'm just walking around my den, I hold a golf club.
Yep. This is also our one scene with Alfred in the episode. And I like anytime Alan Napier shows up as Alfred.
He's very kindly man.
Yep. Also, Holly and I have, I don't know if you've heard this part because you've listened to a couple episodes.
Yeah.
But Holly and I have competing hypotheses about who the mastermind in Gotham is.
Yeah, right.
And Holly's is that it's Robin because Robin, mm-hmm. whenever there's a Riddler episode, Robin knows the answer to everything and immediately.
Right.
And mine is that it's Alfred and he's paying people off because Bruce and Dick are so sad and broken that they need this hero thing to right. fulfill this psychosis. So Alfred just comes around at the end of every fight just handing out envelopes of cash to all the
thank
people.
You.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They needed this.
Which, you know, is Gotham's version of a taco truck on every corner, I think.
You've staved off a mental breakdown right. for another day, bat villains.
My next note is that Aunt Hilda was unavailable, because this is like the third scene where they were talking about Aunt Hilda, but we still hadn't seen her.
Yeah.
We do end up seeing her, so I was wrong. But I really thought that Aunt Hilda was just unavailable as an actress.
Oh, right.
So they were just talking about her because she was always doing things, but they were always off camera.
But we do get there because it turns out that Marcia, the Queen of Diamonds, the potion that she had in her lipstick
yes.
when she kissed Batman didn't even work.
Yes, and Bruce had explained in the previous scene that's only because of extreme concentration on his part, which I think means he was thinking about baseball. I think that's
it's baseball or your grandma. Those are your choices. Yes.
So we cut to Aunt Hilda making potions. She now has, oh my god, what was the monster's name? Morgan?
No. Inside her cauldron inside is like cauldron. A sea monster.
Yeah.
It's a puppet, basically.
Yeah. A sea monster puppet, and she explains that she left a potion in there overnight, and that was just there in the morning.
Just there.
She created life.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Right. Created a new species of animal.
And done as a throwaway gag.
Right.
Like, that's the episode I would follow.
Yeah, apropos of nothing. It has nothing else to do with anything in this episode.
And they're trying. She's trying to make a more potent potion.
Right.
And she can't because she's out of old frogs. Mm-hmm. Which we know because she looks in her old frog drawer.
Mm-hmm. It's labeled.
And it's labeled. It's right next to her new frog drawer. Mm-hmm. Which I appreciated because the word new had that advertising starburst around the word new. But what I actually noticed...
Brand new, shiny frogs!
Yeah, new frogs. What I noticed more than that was the drawer above old frogs was shark toes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have questions.
Yeah.
I wonder who came up with it.
Yeah.
In the writer's room, I wonder... honestly, what a shark toe might be.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll never know. Because Aunt Harriet didn't get her own episode. We find out that the next scene they're going to be shooting, we're back in the Batcave.
Right.
The next scene they're planning to shoot is going to be in the Gotham Museum of Antiquities.
Right.
And Batman has put a homing device on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Literally everything.
He's got to protect the art.
We get to them filming the scene. Unless you have any notes on them in the back game for this.
Nope, nope.
We get to them filming the scene, and right as they're getting ready to film, the curator of the museum, I'm going to assume, because mm-hmm. he's not really introduced,
mm-hmm.
The curator comes in and explains that this valuable armor is missing.
Yeah.
Made of a rare alloy.
Right.
And Batman explains something that for once actually has some scientific merit,
mm-hmm.
which is that the homing device he put on that armor may have been blocked by the magnetic field of the armor, which isn't entirely correct, but is close to a Faraday cage, which is a real phenomenon.
Ah.
So, do you know what a Faraday...
No.
Okay, a Faraday cage is very, very simple. It's just a metal box.
Okay.
And because metal absorbs radio waves and things like that, it'll block signals. It's why phones don't work so well in elevators and things like that, because they're mostly metal boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it blocks most of the signal. Which is what companies use to test signal strength and other things. They build Faraday cages so they can completely control what radio waves are being sent and received.
The reference level that you need to have from the last gag of like old toads
yeah.
to this gag is quite a leap.
Yep.
You know, like a minute ago, they're like, we don't have old toads. We can't make the potion. And then, like, a minute later, there's this.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have to understand this concept to get this gag.
And what I like about this one is a lot of times when they describe something that is science, it's basically the writers going, science words. This one actually has some merit. Like, somebody, the person who was writing this particular episode was like, wait a minute, I know this thing is a thing.
Right. And probably took great pride in it.
Yes.
In getting it, like, closely scientifically accurate.
Yes. Oh, this is scientifically correct.
Like, he went home and told his kids, and when the episodes aired, he explained it to them, and his wife was like, that's enough already. And
yes.
He was like, no, you don't understand.
Right, right. I am actually educating kids in this episode. but Penguin looks over and realizes that Batman and Robin must be on to the fact that the armor is missing.
Right.
So he gets ready to send out goons for the scene.
Yeah. This is leading up to what may be my favorite moment in the episode.
Is it the...
It's coming up soon.
The whole onomatopoeia fight?
After that.
Oh, okay.
But yes.
So we get our onomatopoeia fight for this episode. And since Holly is not here, I did my best to do her job and write down our onomatopoeias. So we had clank, sock, whap, clash, zlonk, and wham.
Yeah.
Meanwhile... They did a pretty good job this episode of not actually breaking any of this stuff in the museum.
No.
Normally, priceless stuff gets broken when they fight and that sort of thing. But they did a pretty good job.
I remember when I was a kid, I would keep track of the onomatopoeias, basically. Like, mm-hmm. I would, because I would want there to be new ones every now and then. New ones right. that I hadn't seen in other episodes. Not just ones they were really using. Also, I had thought that they put up those, I don't know what you'd call them, the title cards, the comic right. book title cards, the clank and all that, so that they wouldn't show us the actual violence of the punching and the kicking or whatever. Like,
no,
I thought it replaced it so that for kids wouldn't see the actual impact of the punches.
No, we get the impact not at all. And then we get the sound.
Yeah.
It is literally just there to be colorful.
Right. It just be comic booky and colorful.
Which I totally appreciate. And what I appreciate most... And there are very few villains who actually do it. Interestingly enough, the one who did it first and the one who was still the best at it was Vincent Price as Egghead.
Mm-hmm.
I always love it when a villain actually gets involved in the fight.
Oh.
In this one, didn't happen. Penguin stood on the sidelines next to a spotlight. Next to a stage light, which... Conveniently, at the end of the fight, he realizes that his goons are all losing, and he turns on Batman and Robin.
Yes. That was my favorite moment of the episode.
Where they are blinded to the point of being immobile.
Right. He just turns on a stage spotlight.
Yeah.
It's a spotlight, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would even have that spotlight for filming a film in the 60s, but maybe they used to.
Maybe, yeah.
It's like a stage light. It's a stage light. It's a light you use in theater for a spotlight.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
and
not...
It wouldn't blind them at all, but somehow they're blinded by it.
They would have to actually turn their heads for a moment, but it wouldn't stop them the way it does. And then they are captured in a net.
Yeah.
And the next thing we see is Penguin explaining that he is going to fire them into Gotham via a catapult.
Catapult?
Yes.
Out of nowhere?
Yes.
He just has a giant catapult that he's strapped to.
He's filming some sort of Greco-Roman masterpiece.
Right.
He's going to need a catapult at some point, right?
Right, that's true, that's true.
And then explain...
I mean, you're saying that. They didn't say that.
Yes, right. Right. He didn't say, get the catapult from the battle scene or anything like that.
No,
he said, this giant catapult.
He made no attempt to justify why it's there.
Yeah. This is part of... By the way, this is one of the reasons why I love having improvers on the show.
Yes.
Is because our brains... work towards justification.
Right.
And there are moments in this show that defy
right.
any
makes
justification.
No sense. Now, I know you see the fights every week because there's always fights.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it in a long time. So about when we were watching the fight, is it always, I'm sure you know it's been like, and I don't know, is it them doing the actual, is Adam West and Burt Ward doing the fights?
There are times when it is them. There are other times when it is clearly stunt
doubles. Oh, okay. Because there were some sequences where I was like, this is them.
Yeah.
And it was basically just stage combat. Like, if they were theatrically trained, at least this fight was just basic swords and shields stage combat. So I'm like, they maybe know some of this.
Yeah. And usually, it's only when there's something super duper acrobatic going on that they go to doubles.
Okay.
So I think this one was, if not all them, was mostly them.
Yeah.
But... They're tied to the catapult, and Penguin explains that he's also tied cameras to their legs so that he could... Oh, gosh, I didn't catch the name of the criminal group he was going to show the film to at the end.
No.
But he's...
It was like the Amalgamated Criminals of Gotham or something. Or, I remember Amalgamated was part of it, because I thought, you don't hear that word every day.
Which I have to say, in Holly's absence, and I would say that both of us would probably agree, that has something to do with the Central Henching Agency.
Oh, okay.
Because we've decided that CHA is where they go for all their henchmen. Except Riddler, who we think is going non-union, which we're not entirely okay with.
Yeah, no, it's wrong.
But
it's morally wrong.
Oh, Penguin then puts his cigarette against a rope, holding for about a second or two, and it immediately bursts into flames. Which, my note is that's not how fire works, but he may have oiled it up or put some sort of accelerant on it.
Again, you're saying this.
Yes. Yes. I am giving him the benefit of the doubt and trying to justify what I have just watched.
Right.
But while they are trapped, that's when the narrator kicks in, because we've reached our cliffhanger.
Yeah. Which I completely forgot about. How could I forget about that? That was one of the most sort of famous parts of the show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
And when the episode, because I was waiting for it to all wrap up, and when they showed up in the catapult, I was like, this is a weird heightened with a minute left of this show.
Yep.
How is this entire episode going to wrap up right now? And it didn't. It's a cliffhanger for next time.
Oh, my goodness. And I'm looking at the episode guide that I've got here. Not only is it a cliffhanger for next time, but this is another three-parter.
Wow.
So there's two more episodes of
Penguin running this film company.
And Marcia, Queen of Diamonds, and Aunt Hilda.
Oh, my God.
Who, by the way, I would love... to watch, even if it was just a few episodes. I would love to watch a show that followed Aunt Hilda for a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Because she...
She's having fun. She was having fun, too.
Oh, yeah. And pardon my language, though, but her life has to be batshit crazy.
Pun intended.
Yes, pardon me, yes.
Something about that scene in particular really hit me that, you know, in this time period of television, the acting was so influenced by stage acting still.
Yes.
You know, on-camera acting is so different now, and they really were more theater acting on film, I guess, in that time period. But there's something that's just great about it for this show.
Oh, yeah.
It works really well.
There's actually, I encourage you to take a look at it. Holly and I actually did a mini episode about it.
Okay.
There's test footage out there of Lyle Wagner.
Uh-huh.
As Batman.
Oh.
And another actor who looks and acts so much like Burt Ward that it's creepy and also a little bit sad that they replaced him with somebody who looks exactly like him.
It's Turt Ward, Burt Ward's younger twin brother.
But Lyle Wagner is very much doing kind of grounded, what you would consider more modern television work.
Uh-huh.
And it changes the tone of everything.
And they're like, that is not what we want.
But it's funny because we've had guests point out that certain things that villains do, if they did it in a Christopher Nolan movie, it would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's awesome in the show too. But particularly there's stuff that Riddler does where it's like, if that had been part of a Christopher Nolan movie, it would have fit immediately straight in.
Right.
And it's so weird that it's just the performances that change the tone so incredibly, and the material could be so very different with a different, just a different version of a vision of the character.
There's nothing on TV like this today. This self-aware, this sort of family friendly, this funny, and where you see the actress having this much fun.
Yeah, and the only thing that's even close is some of the Adult Swim stuff, but that stuff winks to the audience so much. Even when this show breaks the fourth wall, they're not quite winking at the audience in the same way that sort of slapsticky, self-aware kind of stuff is.
Yeah.
But it's like watching pretty much a lot of stuff, because you look at Batman in 66, that show, The Monkees, Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
all started the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at kind of Batman and The Monkees are kind of the closest cousins that started at that same time.
Right.
And it's really this odd sort of time capsule of kind of that late mod, early pop art aesthetic.
Right.
And it's really cool to go back and look at it, but also to look at it not just with an eye towards the campiness of it, but with an eye towards the fun and the dedication that people were actually putting into it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why the show kind of still exists. Aside from the fact that it's an iconic character in Batman, it's that there is that kernel of off-the-wall quality to it. But it's there, and it is quality.
Right. It is quality. It's really enjoyable even now. And like you said, time capsule, it's like, yeah, it's part of what's fun to watch about this. It's like, there's nothing else like that out there.
Right. And we've all become sort of hipsters in a way, in that we all sort of enjoy campiness, and there's this resurgence of people having bad movie nights and all that other stuff,
yeah,
which I love. And it's part of why I love this. But there's also moments in this, again, like I said, that if you lifted that and put it into a modern Batman movie, could be really cool and creepy and weird.
Yeah. Well, people complain, you know, about the rap on the modern DC movies is how deadly serious they are, right? And that's been the big complaint about them, is they take themselves so seriously. And this is the other end of the spectrum.
Yep. Yep. And it's wonderful, though. It is such... It's like a pop culture palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is just something you can just watch and sort of absorb and not have to worry about it or think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this whole podcast is on overthinking this show, but
okay.
But I enjoy it.
You've thought more about these episodes than anyone who made them, probably.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And we've talked about it, and we've talked about joking about the continuity manager and whoever, because there nobody gave a damn about continuity in these episodes.
They're just like, hey, you said Vincent Price was Egghead.
Yes.
But I remember Telly Savalas as Egghead. Were there multiple actors as Egghead, or do I misremember?
Telly Savalas, I don't remember if Telly Savalas was on the show.
Oh, really?
Give me one sec.
I'm just making that up. Maybe
Google is our friend.
Or was who was Mr. Freeze? Wasn't there a Mr. Freeze on the show?
Yes, that was... Otto Preminger was Mr. Freeze.
Whoa.
There were a couple different Mr. Freezes.
For some reason, I remember Telly Savalas as Egghead, but maybe I'm just confusing him from Kojak or whatever show it was.
Well, they had...
And I don't remember Vincent Price on Batman.
They had some amazing guest stars, both as villains and then just people popping out of the windows and stuff like that.
I remember Vincent Price appearing in animated form in the Scooby-Doo cartoons I used to watch as a kid. He was a special... You know, they had the Harlem Globetrotters be on one time with Scooby-Doo. They had Vincent Price be on one time. That was always really... And Batman and Robin, I think, were on a Scooby-Doo cartoon at one time in that era as well.
No Telly Savalas.
What?
Oh,
my God. Ben, this is my whole... childhood's being shattered.
Oh, I'm ruining your life.
Early onset Alzheimer's.
But no Telly Savalas. However, Vincent Price was Egghead.
Okay.
And later on, he's done a cameo, but we haven't seen him as his villain form yet. Milton Berle is a villain called Louis the Lilac.
Of course. Louis Milton Berle.
Uh-huh.
In one of these episodes, the credits say... And Milton Berle
as special
Louis
guest
the
villain.
Lilac.
Yeah. So yeah, here's Vincent Price's Egghead. That's probably what you're thinking
gosh.
Of.
Gosh, wow, that's crazy.
But,
literally holding an egg in his hand.
Oh yeah.
Just so you know for sure what the character is. I'm the guy who looks like an egg.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, you can't... The thing is, though, is that stuff doesn't seem subtle at all. However, that's exactly what comic books are from that era. There's no subtlety. There's
spoon-fed.
Yeah, spoon-fed everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including, I mean, you look at even Marvel from the time and you get wonderful things like Dr. Otto Octavius being the octopus.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and Spider-Man being the spider character. It's just,
yeah,
nobody was really stretching for creative or subtle names there.
Yeah.
but... Mark, we have gotten to the all-important plugging hour.
Oh, gosh.
Is there anything you want to plug? Social media presence, web videos, stage plays?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always doing stuff here in Los Angeles if you're around, and sometimes around the country when I can. So my name is Mark Warzeka, and on Twitter, I'm at Mark Warzeka, MarkWarzecha, at Mark Warzeka on Twitter and Instagram.
How many times, whenever you sign up or talk to anybody, do you spell your last name?
Always.
I had friends whose last name was Aaron Krantz, and it was spelled with more letters than it sounds like it needs.
Yeah.
And when they were kids, they actually had a song that their parents came up with to sort of get them to remember how to spell their last name when they were really little kids.
What's the song? Do you remember?
Oh, I didn't know the song. They just told me it existed. But
A-A-R-N-K-R Krantz.
Right, exactly. But did you have anything, like when you were really little, how long did it take you to learn your last
name? No, we need something. No, my last name is Warzeka, and to where everyone gets lost is in the ZEC in the middle.
Right.
Like when you're trying to tell somebody over the phone how to spell that last name, WAR, they're fine. War. They get war. Right. World War One, World War Two. War is a famous word. When you get to the ZEC, they all sound so similar, especially right. if you're not in person over the phone. It's a disaster.
Right.
Disaster.
So you do a lot of...
Z is in zebra, yeah. E is in Ernie, C is in cat, H-A.
Love it. So as always, you can find Holly, who is not here tonight. You can find her at _awkwardblonde on Twitter and Instagram, and I think on Facebook as well. You can check out her website at awkwardblonde.com, or you can find our podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think those are the three, at Batmania66. You can email us at batmania66mail@gmail.com. Mail is spelled M-A-I-L. And if you're listening, I assume you found us, but you can find us on Podomatic or iTunes. If you're enjoying the show, please go ahead and leave us a review on iTunes. If you don't like Holly and want her to go away, you don't have to put that in the review, but people have. Our first review was this horribly nasty review, which I kind of love, that was basically, I wanted to sit down and listen to this podcast while I watch my Blu-rays, and you guys just make fun of the show, and you don't really like it, and get rid of Holly and get somebody who really likes the show.
Well, they told you, Holly. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's funny as heck, because... I love the show, unironically, but that doesn't mean I can't see the irony and the silliness and the strangeness in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so guys, join us here next time. Same bat time, same bat channel, and it's going to be episode 77 called Penguin Sets a Trend. All right, guys, thank you very much.